This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, September 16th, 2019. I'm Caleb Brown. A new idea from the White House, hastily assembled with some pretty dire civil liberties implications, use consumer tech to monitor the mentally ill for signs of forthcoming violence. The problems with such a plan are manifold. Cato's Julian Sanchez comments.
The Trump administration has been toying with this notion that is, it's called Safe Home, Stopping Aberrant Fatal Events by Helping Overcome Mental Extremes. And this proposal that may or may not be being taken very seriously within the administration would essentially make use of technology to monitor people that are deemed mentally ill to try to predict some sort of violent outburst or mass shootings, for example. So just in general, what was your initial reaction to this idea?
I mean, this does sound like a case where more thought was put into the acronym than the actual proposal. This is apparently just a three-page pitch that was assembled by Bob Wright, a former chairman of NBC, who's a friend of the Trump family, again, reportedly at Ivanka Trump's request. It's something that I'm not sure if any actual mental health professionals had any role in, because, again, based on public reporting, all the actual mental health professionals who have been quoted reacting to it have been sort of appalled. You know, what it's really describing, again, you know, based on the public reporting, is something for which the technology does not exist, that is the technology to, you know, with any remotely reasonable degree of accuracy, predict who is likely to become violent or commit something like a mass shooting. It's not clear how you could conceivably do it consistent with the law. You might be able to get people to opt into something like this, but presumably not the people who are indeed planning violent attacks. And doing it, you know, involuntarily runs into obvious Fourth Amendment problems. So it's sort of legally seems more or less impossible. Technically speaking, the predictive mechanism is essentially imaginary. The Defense Department, in the aftermath of the Fort Hood shooting back in 2012, commissioned a study to look into the feasibility of the much more tractable idea of trying to develop some kind of behavioral indicators for the controlled population of military personnel. And what they concluded was, there just isn't any sort of remotely sufficiently accurate test to detect who is likely to commit these kind of attacks. And indeed, even if a much more accurate test or indicator existed than mental health professionals have access to, it would have sort of the unacceptable problem of, even at, again, a sort of fantasy high level of accuracy, because these events are so rare relative to the population, you would have an enormous number of false positives, many, many more incorrect hits, even for a quite accurate test, than accurate hits, because so few people actually are going to commit mass shootings or other similar acts of violence. If you think about the U.S. population, there's something like 46.6 million adults suffering from some kind of mental illness. There are between 300 and 400 mass shootings a year in the country. Even if you had a extremely accurate test, if you're imagining having access to the full population of people with some kind of mental illness, or even, you know, half of them that you somehow have narrowed down, you're talking about hundreds of thousands potentially of false positives.
And the impulse for people who are trying to prevent these kind of things is not going to be on the side of a type one versus type two error. They're not going to allow the possibility of one false negative going through. That seems totally would be unacceptable.
Well, the nature of it, it would seem to indicate that you would have to follow up on the false positive or on all the hits in order for this to have any kind of reasonable chance of achieving the goal. But I don't think it still would not have much chance of doing that. And, you know, I think, you know, one obvious question to ask is if you're proposing something that if somehow technically and legally you are able to make it work, what would be the effect of this on people's willingness to seek treatment for mental health conditions? If you're told that, you know, going to a psychiatrist, getting diagnosed with a mental illness, maybe seeking medication or other kinds of treatment for some kind of mental problem is going to trigger some kind of, you know, governmental surveillance of your Fitbit or your cell phone or your social media accounts, such that you may then be approached as a potential violent menace if something in your pattern of social media use or phone use changes. Does that make you, you know, more willing to seek help? Something that already, you know, people are struggle with and are fairly reluctant to do. So, you know, again, if somehow technically and legally something like this were actually implemented, I think it would probably have the reverse of the intended effect. And it's also worth noting, I think it's worth, you know, pausing to say the premise is also pretty seriously flawed. That is, the idea that mass shootings and other events like that are primarily a function of mental illness. This is something that I think the Secret Service some years ago looked into. There have been a couple studies that found that, you know, somewhere between 20 and 25% of mass shooters have some kind of diagnosed mental health problem.
Marissa Randazzo, the former chief research psychologist for the U.S. Secret Service, was asked by the Washington Post about this, and she said of the link between mental illness and mass shootings, she said, quote, "Everything we know from research tells us it's a weak link at best."
Right. And, you know, it is true that certain kinds, at least, of mental illness are associated with more violent behavior. Although, you know, the much greater risk usually is self-harm or suicide. But, you know, I think in part it's that we like, or not like to, but we want to think and or instinctively tend to think, well, someone who would, you know, shoot up a Walmart or a school, they must be seriously mentally ill. Only a deeply disturbed person would do something like that. And, you know, probably more than that 25 to 25% have undiagnosed, mental issues of some kind. Although, again, if it's not diagnosed, then they're presumably not in the population of people who would be monitored for sort of incipient violent tendencies. You know, but people don't need mental illness to do horrific things. You know, the people who carried out the Holocaust were by and large not mentally ill in a clinical sense. They were, you know, in other ways somewhat disturbed, but did not suffer from a clinical mental illness. Most terrorists are not mentally ill. Terrorist groups actually do a pretty good job of screening out people with at least evident mental illness, because they're a security risk to a group. All through human history, think of the witch hunts in the early modern period, right? The sort of educated elites of many parts of Europe murdered thousands, tens of thousands of women based on the irrational belief that they were evil sorcerers. People commit horrific acts based on wrong and even irrational beliefs without the need to be clinically mentally ill. So, the idea that if you solve, if you somehow address mental illness, you put a stop to these kind of mass shootings suggests you might indeed stop some, but probably not the majority. You think of people like Dylann Roof, who shot up a Black Baptist church based on appalling racist beliefs. I don't know if he's been psychologically evaluated. Certainly, he was not did not make a successful insanity defense when he was convicted of murder. People do these things based on terrible ideologies that are not necessarily a sign of mental illness, however horrific and irrational they may seem to us.
One of the things here, you mentioned Bob Wright, who is the person who came up with this proposal, and he has proposed the creation of the Health Advanced Research Projects Agency, or HARPA, much right. like DARPA that you mentioned earlier. And the Washington Post also notes that there is some support for this, at least among some Democrats running for president. Joe Biden suggested that a so-called HARPA agency mm-hmm. could help solve health problems, including Alzheimer's and obesity, which gives you an indication the idea hasn't even gone anywhere and they're already thinking about new ways to use it.
Yeah, I mean, the bizarre thing to me there is, we already have a National Institutes of Health, we have the National Institutes of Mental Health, and it's not clear what function an agency like this would serve that they don't. The acronym there is obviously modeled on military's sort of scientific research wing, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, that did play a role, or at least the predecessor played a role in the developing the internet many decades ago, and makes sense in a sense to have a distinct research wing that is focused on the sort of the specific needs of the military. But it's, we do have other agencies that do various kinds of health research. We, of course, have a thriving private sector and in academia, a variety of medical and mental health research that is often in part government funded. So, without debating independently, the wisdom of that funding, it's just not at all obvious what standing up a new agency duplicating that work would be.
Julian Sanchez is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us and suggest show topics on Twitter @CatoPodcast.